The views expressed in this episode of Squared Circle Gazette Radio aren't necessarily the true opinions of the individuals in the prosecution or the defense, but for the sake of debate, it's time to go to court. Hello everyone, and welcome to the 43rd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke, alongside G. John Chase.
Bonjour.
Carl Jones.
I move for a bad court thingy.
And Kieran O'Rourke.
Hello, ladies.
And back with us for the first time in a while is Luke Edwards.
Oh, it's judging time. Gavel, gavel.
And we are back today, as you heard from the off, for the trial of Paul Heyman. This is the fourth Squared Circle Gazette Radio court case. If you haven't heard our previous ones, you can go back and listen to them in the archives by going to squaredcirclegazette.podbean.com or subscribing to us on iTunes at Squared Circle Gazette Radio and checking out those as well. But this is going to be a very, very interesting debate. Paul Heyman, a bit more of a sacred cow than the people we're used to bringing up on the stand here at Squared Circle Gazette. So this should be a pretty good one. I'm going to hand it over now. I'm going to take the host cap off and the sheepskin wig back on and hand it over to the Honourable Luke Edwards, who is the judge. At long last, gavel in hand, you've been waiting for a long time, Luke. Over to you to lead this and explain the charge and the rules.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we gather for a most serious matter. The trial of Paul Heyman. The charge brought before us today that Paul Heyman's booking was more detrimental than positive for the business of wrestling in the long term. We have one of the strongest prosecution teams that has ever been assembled here on the Squared Circle Gazette Radio, but also a defense team with quite an impressive record. Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to hear magic. And with that, I would like to pass it over for the opening statement of our prosecution. Two of the most vitriolic, relentless hounds of justice ever to be assembled for a podcast. Kieran O'Rourke and the G. John Chase.
Thank you, Judge. That was both dramatic, moving, and emotional.
I got tingles.
If somewhat monotone. As the judge rightly said, we're here today to judge Paul Heyman on the charge that his booking was more detrimental to the long term than it was positive. Now, we appreciate that Paul Heyman is held in high esteem by probably almost everyone listening to this, and quite frankly, we're not here to say that Paul Heyman is a clueless buffoon along the lines of Vince Russo. We're not here to debate that Paul Heyman has contributed both as a booker and a talent. In fact, we're not here to debate him as a talent whatsoever. And as we get into this prosecution, it's a definition and a distinction that must be made between Paul Heyman the performer and Paul Heyman the booker. We're not here to debate that he did a good job building ECW from a nondescript regional promotion into the collective conscience of the wrestling industry. However, it is our argument that when it comes to the long-term pros and cons of his booking, the key word that we must always remember is sustainability. And it is our opinion, Paul Heyman's booking has been more detrimental in the long term than it has been a boon to the wrestling industry.
And so we pass over to our defense. Those tasked with the defense of Paul Heyman, although I'm sure we all agree that if Mr. Heyman could have caught his flight, he would have defended himself quite admirably. However, we have truly this third or fourth best option other than the implacable Liam O'Rourke and the old man himself, Carl Jones.
Thank you, I think, Your Honour. We do not live in a utopian world in which the actions taken by others benefit every person 100% or create the absolute perfect scenario, and it would be churlish to suggest otherwise. Now, the wrestling industry is no different in this regard than any other walk of life. This brings me to our client, the defendant, Mr. Paul Heyman. We as the defense acknowledge that Mr. Heyman has at times made decisions which some would criticize and others praise. It's called taking a balanced approach. It's called, in Mr. Heyman's case, being human. Now, unfortunately, our friends on the prosecution, despite what they may have suggested, do not appreciate such complexities. They are going to conflate issues and events, to overstate the influence Mr. Heyman possessed, to willfully distort everything in a negative light. Also, they can assassinate the character of a man who for 7 years dutifully ran what can be best described as a semi-national wrestling promotion. We in the defence will not abide such parlour games and allow this esteemed courtroom to become the scene of a glorified show trial. Your Honour, we are all entitled to our own opinion, but we are not entitled to our own facts. No matter how much the prosecution wishes to assert that Mr. Heyman as a booker was more of a detriment to the wrestling industry, we, as the defence, will show that many of the perceived negatives within the wrestling business that the prosecution seek to blame on Mr. Heyman are largely the result of events outside of Mr. Heyman's control and based on decisions made by people outside of Mr. Heyman's sphere of influence. We will show that Mr. Heyman, in his time as a wrestling booker, was largely positive, providing a platform for many wrestlers to reach creative peaks and reap future financial rewards, while simultaneously providing fans with an engaging and entertaining wrestling product.
Let the record show that the prosecution showed world-class levels of scoffing throughout the entirety of Mr. Jones's statement.
They can't handle the truth.
It would be fitting at this point in the trial for us to move back to the prosecution, for you to begin to attempt to convince myself, the only person around this wonderful, magnificent oaken table that really matters. Kick this off and convince me, sir, that Paul Heyman was more of a detriment to this business that we do so love, occasionally, than a positive in the long term.
Okay, thank you, Your Honour. That was both, again, moving and a little arousing. The first point we want to get to is the proliferation of the hardcore style that Heyman implemented in ECW, or we say exacerbated in ECW. We're not going to debate that there was a certain necessity for that company to stand out on its own right for that target audience. However, in the long term, I mean, there can be no debate that Heyman created a cult of personality around himself and ECW in order to encourage his talent to put their bodies on the line above and beyond what is absolutely sane for the professional wrestling industry, which, let's not forget, is supposed to be a work people. I think that's Carl's line, so I'll use the defence's lines against them. Heyman is an excellent motivator. There's no doubt about it. He's a great talker. The cult and the psychology created amongst his talent, the trench mentality, to go above and beyond, to put their bodies on the line, to kill themselves, to cut their faces into pieces, to burn themselves, to take chair shot after chair shot. The long-term effects on the individuals, there can be no debate that the negative involved. In terms of the fans, we'll get to this point later, the effect this has had on the industry. But in terms of the individuals involved, there can be no debate. It's almost reprehensible that the encouragement Heyman would give to his talent and the way he sustained it in the short term was by encouraging the proliferation of drug use backstage. Not even allude to directly. I think, Chase, you've got you want to make a reference to a point.
Yeah, I mean, in the Raven Sandman shoot interview that they did for Ring of Honor, Sandman turned up to one of the ECW shows in an ill-fated perform. Paul Heyman turned to Sandman and said, to find New Jack, get some drugs off of him and take him before you go out there because you need to perform. Because Sandman was just in no shape, he could barely even stand.
Get some coke in him, I think.
Get some
the line.
Yeah, score. Score some coke in him.
If we want to so be ready to specific on the substances.
Yeah. That Paul Heyman knew of drug use in the company. He knew which members took drugs and also encouraged members to take drugs in order to perform to the level that he wanted.
Actively encouraging drug use to proliferate the hardcore style that company, in his opinion, and he was probably correct, to create an entertaining product for his target audience. But this in microcosm is the point of the case at hand. Short-term benefits, long-term detriments.
So I'd like to touch on drug use first. One of the people they've chosen to take a sort of a crib note sort of quote from, if you like, if that's fair to say, is Raven, a man who is well documented for his drug use prior to joining ECW. He's on record as stating himself that in 1994 he was actively taking drugs as a member of the World Wrestling Federation. Drug use in wrestling was prevalent throughout the 80s. My point is, we're talking about the influence of Heyman and his effect on the business. Now, if drug use is already prevalent long before he's in charge of ECW, I fail to see how we can lay that claim at his door.
The defence does raise an interesting point that I would like to delve into slightly deeper. As I understand it, the prosecution's point is that Paul Heyman's booking, particularly of the more violent things, was what was leading to more drug use. Is that the point you're making? Can you clarify?
Yeah, in order to sustain it in the short term and to motivate the guys to continue it, the drug use was absolutely vital to the continuation of it. It was not sustainable, even in the short term, without the encouragement of this horrendous drug use.
And it's just showing that, like, Paul Heyman isn't very willing to do much in return besides what doesn't just facilitate the ECW product or himself. If this guy was so good, or like so caring about his talent because he wants to push him so hard, then surely you'd have their personal interests at heart as well, a physical, emotional and a mental perspective, you know.
Exactly. He's not only facilitating, he's actively encouraging drug use for the talent to go out and perform the way that he wants them to perform, to be able to push their bodies to the extreme and beyond. It's irresponsible and it's reprehensible, in my opinion.
At what point does personal accountability come into this? Mr. Heyman can suggest to individuals to go and use drugs, to score drugs, as the kids may say. These individuals can say no. Just say no, kids. To use an analogy here, it's like blaming Samuel Colt for every person who gets shot by a gun. You know, do we blame him for every murder? No, because personal responsibility has to come into this. Now, made a statement there about the selfishness of Mr. Heyman and the way in which he treated talent. As a counterpoint to that, draw your attention to one character reference, which would come from Taz, who openly acknowledged that during the time that he had a broken neck, which he suffered whilst wrestling for ECW, Mr. Heyman, working under a verbal contract, paid Taz every single cent that he was owed during that time, and he didn't wrestle for close to a full year.
The idea, Your Honour, that this hardcore style of wrestling was something that Heyman pushed on people, they mention it there themselves, a necessity for the audience. This is the thing you've got to keep in mind when it comes to Paul Heyman's philosophy on ECW. The words out of their mouth were a necessity for the audience. When it comes to booking, the idea is to appeal to an audience to get the most out of the wrestlers, to draw a great product that will click with the audience at the time. In terms of him being a motivator, he was a superb motivator. But again, if these guys didn't want to do something, they can say no. If these guys don't want to do drugs, hey, Paul, again, they're mentioning Paul Heyman and the ECW cult and the environment as the reason why drug use is being, you know, perpetuated and encouraged even. People who aren't in ECW are doing crazy stunts, taking crazy drugs. This is not an exclusive thing to Paul Heyman. To lay this at the feet of Paul Heyman as if this is his impact on the wrestling in the long term is a negative. There are people who are far more guilty of this than Paul Heyman. There are a higher death count in other companies at other periods of time than ECW.
We're not talking degrees of guilt, we're talking the guilt of Paul Heyman and the responsibility of Heyman as the head booker and eventual owner of ECW.
However, the
I fail to see how any other company's operations are relevant to this court case.
The exact charge to the letter, Your Honour, is that Paul Heyman's booking was more detrimental than positive to the business. If Paul Heyman was never born, all of these things that they're saying would still exist, because they existed before and after him.
If they want to bring like other companies into position, well, okay, but those other companies lasted a lot longer. So any kind of death toll that's on their side of things is going to be higher. But with ECW, the percentage of like the deaths is probably just as high over the brief period that they were around.
Doesn't touch world class. The amount of people
they're not on trial.
It's irrelevant.
That's no, it's not irrelevant.
It's not irrelevant because your charge is about the business as a whole. You can't make the charge that Heyman's influence was such that he had this massive negative impact on the business as a whole, and then try to confine your argument solely to a 7-year span.
The defense briefly mentioned about the audience, right, and what the audience are expecting. Well, you know, okay, let's actually really take a look at the dynamic between the audience and, you know, the performers, okay? There's this kind of myth that, like, that the audience were just their own mind, okay? They just came to these shows and they just immediately wanted blood, and that the performers were just baying, like, oh, we got to please them. One side of that is true. The performers did want to please the crowd. But the reason why the crowd was so thirsty for blood was because of Paul Heyman. Because as they were developing ECW, every moment he could, whether it's just through with the booking or the general advertisement of the product, or even when he got out in front of the crowd himself, he'll show this image of, this is extreme championship wrestling, this is extreme wrestling, you won't see this anywhere else, okay? You're going to see things that WCW and WWF won't supply. And so because of that, they're fueling the audience expectation. So all of a sudden, the audience are now expecting to see not just a table spot here and there, but all the fucking time. And so because of this, his actual performers now have to do this all the fucking time. You know, this is Paul Heyman fueled the audience, right? So Paul Heyman, this is how sneaky he is, right? This is how he manipulates the people that works in his roster, right? Because WCW and WWF didn't want them, he used it and said, like, okay, you can't compete on those levels, but help me make ECW into that level. But to do this, we're going to have to do whatever we want. So he kind of emotionally blackmails them or just convinces them into performing stupid stunts. That's what this circle is. It isn't just a relationship between the audience and the wrestlers. It's everything that Paul Heyman's created. He's in charge of the company. He's in charge of the creative direction. You know, the audience didn't dictate anything. Paul Heyman did. In a documentary called Barbed Wire City, an interviewer is talking to Axel Rotten. This is back in about 2001, right? The interviewer points to Axel Rotten's scars on his arms, to which Axel Rotten says, "They're all from ECW, actually, every one of them." The interviewer asks him, "What made you do that?" And he turns around and says, "Oh, it was the biggest mistake I ever made. I remember the first night it happened. Me and Ian were wrestling each other in a barbed wire baseball bat match, and Paulie is like, 'You've got to go out there and give these people something crazy.' So we went out there, busted our asses, almost killed ourselves. No appreciation. No, here's some more cash or a handshake. It was just a big mistake." So, like, even these wrestlers afterwards recognized the things that they were being forced to do. You have to bleed, you have to go through a flaming table, you have to hit him in the nuts with a freaking kendo stick.
Your Honor, there's a few things I want to touch on there, because I think that's a complete misrepresentation of ECW. ECW was not about just going out there and beating the shit out of people with baseball bats. You never had to say that to Rey Mysterio or Psicosis or guys like that, Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero. To say that the audience didn't want this kind of action, this was something that ECW and Paul Heyman himself led the fans to want. That audience in Philadelphia were already getting that from the Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, led by Joel Goodhart. This was not a thing that Paul Heyman brought to the audience, made them want, and then he had to feed it constantly. Paul Heyman is doing his best as a promoter without ample amounts of money to bring in great, you know, a ton of great talent. He's got guys who they themselves have mentioned subpar, Ian, Axel, Ron, guys who they say that, you know, they had to do this, and it's the biggest mistake of their lives. People like Ian and Axel Rotten were doing that style after ECW went out of business for companies like XPW and CZW and IWA Mid-South anyway. So it's not like, hey, it's not ECW's fault. ECW's gone and they still chose to do this. So they can say it's the biggest mistake of their lives. Paul Heyman is a promoter, so of course he's going to do everything he can to get the most out of his guys. If what he can get out of the guys is that they have to go out there and do dangerous things, again, if they have somewhere else to go, they can go there. They didn't. It's not emotional blackmail. And this is the thing, this is what it comes down to with a lot of these guys. The guys like the Rottens, the Dudleys, guys like that. And this is something that I think a lot of fans miss. These guys hadn't been anywhere in the business, really. Of course they're going to dive in headfirst, because again, it happens everywhere. These guys want to be part of something special. If Paul Heyman has the canvas to allow guys to try and do something special, to try and make themselves great, Paul Heyman, of course Paul Heyman's going to go for it, because it's in his best interest as a businessman.
However, I want to bring both groups back to the charge itself, which is whether it was more detrimental than positive in the long term. Now, we've had a lot and lot of talk. I would like to ask the prosecution, at this time, is this something you still see happening today, thus the long term, and does that trace back to Paul Heyman?
The long-term effect when it comes to the performers that came out of ECW past ECW and into their futures up until, if they're still wrestling, very recently, is that the majority of these guys, if not almost all of them, they still do the same style. Okay, briefly just kind of use Axel Rotten again in the same interview, in which the interviewer asks, how could ECW have stopped the fans from wanting more and more violence? Axel Rotten says, "Never have started. Once you've done what we did, you only have to do more." And this is what the mindset is. It can only assume probably the same with the others due to the fact that they've continued to do the hardcore style. Once ECW finished, Sabu didn't change his style. He still went through tables. It was the same with everyone else. And I mean, how often outside of WWE have you seen ECW reunion shows? They keep doing it because the audience has expectations for that particular talent. When you get over doing a specific thing, you won't suddenly change what you're doing. You're going to continue doing that. And that harks back to what Paul Heyman started in ECW. This is your style now, and they've been living it ever since.
Yeah, if we're talking about legacy of that original crew, I believe it was the 2012 Extreme Uprising, the first reunion show that Shane Douglas did. It was New Jack himself quoted, "Guys turn up into the ring drunk, high on pills, or even high on heroin." This is the legacy of that original ECW tenure. That's if the guys are even fucking alive still.
Okay. Did the fans book those shows? the hardcore reunions? No, they did not. Did Paul Heyman book any of those hardcore reunions where all these years later they're still taking the hardcore bumps and still doing drugs? No. Because it's personal accountability. They have all chosen to do this. Without Paul Heyman being there, they all chose to dive in headfirst into a tank full of sharks again. The audience, which, by the way, a lot of them have moved on. But the demand for an ECW product in this day and age is minimal compared to what it was 20 years ago. So I don't see how Paul Heyman's booking has anything to do with these guys, Your Honor, 17, 18 years later, doing drugs and still carving each other's heads open and bashing each other in the head with baseball bats wrapped in barbed wire, when Paul Heyman is not there. If these guys could do anything else, they should be doing something else. Why has this got anything to do with Paul Heyman's booking philosophy having a detrimental effect on the long term of the wrestling business, as opposed to a few guys doing drugs on a show years and years and years and years and years after ECW's gone out of business and Heyman's got nothing to do with them anymore?
Now, I'm going to take us away from this particular topic at this time. I am conflicted at this point. I think the defense might be neglecting somewhat the ripple effect of the stone cast by Heyman, which, while it is no longer as strong as it was in the 90s, we do affect the future in our own way of what we do, even if we are not part of it. Indeed, it's how he affected the business. Please, elucidate for me.
If I can just say, though, Your Honor, that initial ripple which you're referring to can still only be caused by a willing participant.
Hmm.
Unless Paul Heyman is placing their arm down, finding a vein, and physically injecting them himself with heroin. Yeah, we're very much blurring the lines here. At some point, these individuals have to take some responsibility for their own actions.
And again, Your Honor, there were people in ECW who didn't use drugs. Lance Storm's as clean as they come. I'm not saying that they were in the majority at all, but again, in terms of, there are people who their lifestyle wasn't changed just because they're in ECW. They have a thing in them that could do this anyway, and that's evidenced by the fact of, yeah, sure, ripple effect, but they still do it now.
I would like to steer us towards another topic of conversation by looking at the feedback that we have received. A character named what I assume is an attempt to spell ruin at the TPWW forums simply stated, "Backyard Wrestling." And this is an interesting point I'd like to bring up. Loopy Date, also from the TPWW forums, notes that backyard wrestling would be the biggest boon to the prosecution. Overall, I think the defense has it really easy. But backyard could be their kryptonite. WWE and WCW glorifying the garbage side of ECW led to countless kids on trampolines who would never be in the sort of shape or have the sort of skill required to be a wrestler, but damn it, they sure could hit each other with shit and make each other bleed. And I think that's a fair point. Is garbage wrestling being popularized in that era? They certainly popularized it, and what it did to backyard wrestling. I would like to discuss that and what effect that had for the business in the long term.
I think it's essential that we keep coming back to the fact that we're talking about Heyman's booking on the business as a whole, on a much wider spectrum. What is backyard wrestling in truth? It's a subsect. You can talk about sort of popularization of it as much as you would like. It's still on the fringes. It's still viewed by a very, very small minority. And on the subject of Loopy Date there, who, because he referenced WCW and WWE, if you'll indulge me slightly with this, those two companies, which he's saying branched it out to the wider audience, how did that come about? That has more to do with the actions of those two companies and being in direct competition with each other and needing something to use against each other than what Paul Heyman was doing as booker of ECW.
Yeah, a couple of points. First of all, the prosecution would never dream of assimilating backyard wrestling directly with ECW Heyman. Kids and wrestling fans will always wrestle on their own backyards. The bigger problem here is, yeah, the proliferation of the hardcore style. It's a changing in psychology away from what wrestling is and should be. It's towards the short-term stunt wrestling done in ECW to cover shortcomings. I would argue maybe the biggest impact this has is the killing of psychology amongst wrestling fans and future wrestlers in the making. Not only that, but it also the stigma of wrestling in the media, which gets brought about from backyard wrestling and kids doing silly things which they just shouldn't do. The the hardcore influence of Heyman lead this down a path which has been a detriment to the foundations, the breeding ground of wrestlers of tomorrow? I would absolutely argue, absolutely. You know, John Cena was a backyard wrestler, but you've got a generation of guys following ECW who have their idea of being a wrestler is it's violent, it's stunt wrestling, it's smoke and mirrors, which they don't even realise because they were drawn to it. Would I assimilate that with the influence of ECW? Yeah, absolutely.
Again, we're talking about in the long term, however. The business now is less dangerous, there's less hardcore elements in it now than there's been in a long, long time. Mick Foley was jumping off his ceiling long before ECW came along. This is the idea of fans doing crazy things because they're big fans is not something that was born necessarily when ECW was around.
We would never argue that. What we're saying is proliferation of the style. It's not an origination. It's not the seed of the style. It's the proliferation of the style is the detriment.
In which case, I would come back to my colleague's initial point of the business is much more toned down now than it was 10 years ago.
And there are still many great matches with many great wrestlers. So to say that a generation, and it would be this generation we're witnessing now, was influenced so strong by ECW that they can do nothing but carve themselves and throw themselves off buildings, simply isn't the case, Your Honour.
No, this would, and this leads on to our next point, which I think that maybe the defence has jumped ahead a little bit here. Okay, so we come out this, the Monday Night Wars, where we freely admit, WCW and WWF scratching around looking for any advantage over the other. Part of that was incorporating elements popularised by ECW. That in itself is a direct link to Heyman and his influence of the product he's popularised. What happened 2001, ECW goes out of business because he can't get telly. A contributing factor is the stigma of wrestling, which ECW must lay the blame at its own door. The Eric, for instance, the Mass Transit, Eric Kulis, New Jack slicing incident cost them their first opportunity on pay-per-view.
But they did get it back, Your Honor, 2 months later.
The point being, the stigma is another layer to the stigma of pro wrestling as garbage in the entertainment business. Knock-on effect, this, and we're not saying this is all ECW, but it's a contributing factor, which, again, comes back to the Heyman influence. WCW also can't get telly. No one wants to touch it with a barge pole. Goes out of business. Leaves us with one company. Obviously, the business is the worst for it. Heyman gets control in 2002 on SmackDown. To a much lesser extent, encourages during his reign on SmackDown the encouragement of guys to push their bodies to extremes, which for the good of the show in the short term. But in the long term, what happened? The whole company had to regress. People here around this table have lamented the PG style, lamented the toning down of WWE product in recent years. The last 10 years in wrestling have been one of the most boring, nondescript periods in the history of the business. Why? Because the WWF, understanding that for the long-term sustainability of its industry, had to go away from the stylistic elements which were proliferated by Heyman and ECW. In my opinion, the defence has actually hit on a point which is thoroughly played into our hands, that in order to sustain the industry, sustain its business, it's had to regress away from the elements which were instigated and proliferated by Heyman and the Heyman influence.
Interesting point, and I will say that, to be honest, and I'm saying this in full candid nature, I think that the stigma is far more than the drugs, far more than backyard wrestling, the most interesting and logical argument that you can make to try and point out Heyman's influence. But again, this needs wider context for you, Johan, to actually understand. The idea that ECW's stigma had a knock-on effect throughout the business, whether it be through WCW not being able to get on TV, ECW not being able to get on TV, because, you know, the WWF having to tone things back. Let's look again, wider picture here. ECW's influence, which is what they're talking about here, was a key in the WWF becoming what it is now. If WWF wasn't able to look at something, take something, use it as their own, and use it to take the company to heights that it's never seen before and has never seen since, may never see again, who knows. If they had died and WCW was left with the infrastructure that was there, who knows what would happen. WCW did not die strictly because of the wrestling stigma, but ECW's stigma is a small, tiny fraction part, maybe at best, for why WCW couldn't get TV. It couldn't get TV because nobody wanted to touch him with the barge pole, not because wrestling was unpopular necessarily, because it wasn't. Ratings were still pretty good at the time. However, they didn't want to touch a company that had lost that much fucking money in the last 2 years, because why on earth would you? Especially since it's just been cancelled by its parent station. It doesn't look like a successful business enterprise, and that weighs a lot more in the death of WCW than just because some companies decide to look at something that ECW was doing over here, take it for their own, and adopt it poorly. The WWF and WCW are far more influential to the wider landscape of the television industry than ECW is. WWF took ECW's elements that worked, and if they use them in their own way, if they use them for their own style, and they had the cat getting a top ripped off on a WWF pay-per-view, and that pisses off sponsors, that's not Heyman's fault. An influence can be drawn. However, you can't necessarily say Paul Heyman doing that is the direct reason why the business has suffered in the long term.
On the side of the defense, I would actually like to present this point to the prosecution. This is from Laz at Pro Wrestling Only. Blaming Heyman and ECW for the garbage that was CZW, XPW, Russo, etc., that spewed out, is like blaming John Carpenter for awful slasher flicks. It's not his fault that people took away the sizzle and forgot the steak beneath it. Any thoughts on that?
When we're talking influence, influence can manifest in many ways, and imitation and replication, attempts at replication, just because a slasher flick with no soul, they're still inspired by an original source, and which is the point when we're talking about long-term effects. That is the crux of the point. If a negative effect is inspired by an originating source must take responsibility.
On the topic of originating source, then, by that logic, we can just go back forever and a day. We've already referenced Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, which predates Heyman. We can also talk about Memphis Wrestling. Now, no one thinks of Memphis Wrestling as necessarily garbage wrestling, but a lot of the blood involved and the violent nature of it, you know, Memphis was a pronounced user of the scaffold match, was an influence on Heyman. So by that logic, we can bring it back to the Jarretts.
Well, I'd like to point out that Grapplin Apple, over at Pro Wrestling Only, with a remarkable amount of words I never expected to have to say with this voice. Memphis ran the Tupelo Concession Brawl once every couple of years. ECW ran it seemingly every night. Now, it's true that Memphis had brutal feuds with bloodletting, but they hardly worked as over-the-top hardcore style as ECW. No one in Memphis would have been jumping off a balcony as their gimmick.
No, they were knocked off scaffolds instead, and in the case of Mick Foley, did their Nesta plunge off the apron onto a concrete floor.
I see the point. Memphis was a far more controlled environment than ECW. ECW, I mean, that was part of their deal, was that they would go to the extreme. ECW did push that envelope more than Memphis did. However, if they want to talk about influence with ECW and WCW, then why I don't see why the same argument wouldn't apply, in theory, to Memphis and ECW, in which case you can blame everything back to the originating source, which is their words, not ours, and they're not alone. I don't want to just pin Memphis.
I'm a little confused by the defence's argument here. I mean, on one hand, the defence is saying that the positives of Heyman's influence in ECW led to a wrestling boom, but on the other hand, absolves him of all blame as the originator of the style. Obviously, we're not claiming that the hardcore bloodletting style originated in ECW, but it's the popularisation of it in ECW which led to the later proliferation and negative aspects which we're referring to here.
I don't believe my colleague at any point said that ECW was the originator of the wrestling boom, as it were.
I believe the quote was elements taken from elements.
That's
not
the key.
Completely responsible for the boom. My colleague Carl made the point of saying they were going to use that WCW and WWE. They were going to use these elements anyway because they were the ones in a war. ECW's influence. They were something that was working over here. That way we can take elements from, and if we can adopt that into our own structure that we already have in place, because we're in a war situation and we're looking for anything we can do to survive this war.
I would like to actually ask the defense a question a moment, because there's something the prosecution has said has spurred an interest in me. Whether they are defending on the side that Paul Heyman's booking was completely neutral, or whether it was somewhat more positive. I believe Mr. Jones did mention that it was somewhat more of a positive impact in his opening statement. Would I be correct in remembering this?
I did use the word positive, okay. And I use that in a sense strictly relating to the talent, for the most part, because we talked about talent there before and the weaknesses of certain talent. The defence mentioned the Rottens,
yes.
A very apt name for two individuals, in my opinion. There is a lot of talent there that were able to push on to a larger scale, not necessarily through blood and guts by any means. I'll use a few examples if I may. Steve Austin, who had been fired by WCW, he wasn't known for a hardcore style, didn't wrestle a particularly hardcore style. I believe he only wrestled two matches in ECW over a 2-month period, but he was cast aside. WWF wasn't calling him. Paul Heyman did, and Paul Heyman offered him a platform to merely speak, to articulate, and that is how he got noticed. Now, I'm not suggesting that the WWF used him perfectly initially, but you could make the case that he wouldn't necessarily have been picked up by them if that wasn't there. Well, the same can be said for Mick Foley, cast aside by WCW. He gets noticed off the strength of his character and promos than off anything he does in the ring in a hardcore element.
For clarification, then, you are saying that, of course, Paul Heyman's positive impact on the business, in this example, giving a platform to performers such as Mick Foley and Steve Austin, outweighs the prosecution putting forth that it damaged the career of Axel Rotten. I think we can all agree on this, but...
Again, let me stress the case. We are talking about the business as a whole. Now, what's of greater impact to the business as a whole? Some drug takers like New Jack? Someone who mutilates themselves of their own volition, like Axel Rotten? Or a situation where someone like Mick Foley and Steve Austin, having been cast aside by one company, are able to position themselves to the point, because Heyman's given them the platform in the first place, when no one else in North America was, to get picked up by the WWF and become two, arguably, in the case of Foley, I will stress this is objective, two of the three biggest stars of the biggest peak in the wrestling business's history. WCW are not looking at Chris Jericho before ECW pick him up. Wrestlers who would go on to be prominent featured players in the wrestling landscape are not blood and guts wrestlers, but ring technicians. And you cannot make any assertion that they would have been given that platform without Heyman.
Hey, I'll give you some more. Malenko, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, Psychosis. Plenty of guys, yeah. We know what the midnight is. What midnight is, the late night is, the Monday Night War. It was a nuclear arms race for talent. Guys were going from New Japan, AAA. You're telling me, I firmly believe, if there's no ECW, those guys get picked up eventually one way or the other.
When Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit and Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero are wrestling in ECW in 1994-95, who's being picked up by WF and WCW initially? We're talking Yeti, we're talking John Tenta jumping ship, we're talking Man Mountain Rock.
Fully accepted, but there can be no debate that the Monday Night Wars started the biggest chase for talent in the history of wrestling, and I will not accept, and I don't know how you can deny, that one way or the other guys would have got picked up and signed.
That's one hell of an assumption to make.
Again,
I think it's completely based in logic. Completely based in logic. With or without ECW, those guys would have found their ways. The talented guys, maybe the public enemies wouldn't, but that's the Heyman myth. This is the whole point we're talking about. The influence of Heyman on Austin, Foley, Jericho, Guerrero, those guys. They weren't made stars in ECW. The characters weren't even derived from their time in ECW.
Nobody's saying they were. We didn't even say they were.
So the influence of Heyman is negligible because they would have got picked up and developed.
It's not because he's giving them the platform. But they would have given them the time.
You're talking about Steve Austin there. Let's just use Austin as an example because I saw your smile when we mentioned his name. The fact is, when Steve Austin, while the Monday Night War was going on, we documented this on a previous podcast, the war had already started when WCW fired Steve Austin. So in terms of a nuclear arms race for talent, it's not like this is blanket thing of let's just grab everyone we can that's talented immediately right from the off. They got into a war. Yes, of course they're going to look around for talent because that's the landscape we're in. But to deny that ECW had a positive influence on the business because they were the ones who showcased that, hey, in America, these guys can get over. Hey, Steve Austin can do a good promo. And Cactus Jack is a money character. That's the point. We're not necessarily saying that, hey, the Monday Night War has absolutely nothing to do with why these guys were picked up. Of course they were. But you can't deny that the reason they were picked up was because Paul Heyman showed them both, and this was probably the biggest influence that ECW had on the wrestling business, was that Paul Heyman showed both big companies, these guys here, that you haven't considered for years and years and years, can be stars, and they were.
In terms of where do they come from? Did they pass through ECW? Absolutely. But it's circumstantial. I truly believe it's circumstantial. Austin wasn't picked up straight away because he was injured.
He was fired by Steve, by WCW.
Well, that's because they're inept and it's got enough to do with
yeah,
Heyman.
But to say they're inept and that's the reason why they're not going to sign
the guy.
I can't go both ways.
You've got to remember the time and place as well. When that went down, when the culling of Bischoff, the expansion of payrolls in both companies, which would eventually contribute to the death of WCW, that would have happened anyway. So, yeah, it may have been slower, but
once the war kicks in, when money's been thrown around in 96, 97, they were still being picked up. I truly believe that. So therefore, the impact of Heyman, although it may have sped things up, it's negligible in
but
the long
again,
term.
That entire theory you're on is completely speculative because they can't prove that that would be the case. We can prove, and it's in, again, the burden of proof lies with the prosecution. The course of history writes itself. These guys were in ECW. These guys did get onto the platform because Heyman did show that they were worth it in America. What they're saying is completely speculative, and the burden of proof sits with them.
And this assertion that certain wrestlers, let's use Steve Austin as the example again, wasn't picked up because he was injured, that has never stopped the major companies picking up talent before.
Brian Pillman.
See, Brian Pillman with his crushed ankle.
Exactly. Thank you. So, to say, Brian Pillman, that's exactly the point. Exactly the point. Later on, when the war hots up and money's being thrown around, they signed Brian Pillman because they were desperate.
Because he got hot in ECW.
Because it would... Oh, come on, that's speculative at best.
It's not.
They signed because of ECW.
Yeah, he did. Because he went there and he proved in ECW, not WCW, that he could be a top money character. In WCW had him for years.
A money character in ECW? What money was ever made by anyone in ECW?
That's completely ignoring the point of this entire debate, which is influence. This is what you're talking about. His booking was a negative influence on the business long-term. Overall detrimental effects. Brian Pillman... To say that his ECW even had nothing to do with him getting signed by the WWF in a bidding war is ridiculous. He proved that he was worth the money they were bidding for him. That's the entire point. He got to do that, not in WCW, but in ECW.
Just because they were in ECW, impact of them being in ECW is negligible, because if they were anywhere else, they would have been picked up eventually as well.
King Pitkos at the UK Fan Forum notes that if he'd made nobodies into stars, they'd have been drawing money in ECW. What he was good at was making nobodies seem like potential stars to McMahon and Bischoff. He was good at coming up with a broad idea that the WWF filtered into gold and did much better. Heyman can run a decent feeder system, but that's about his limit. Heyman's big trick was convincing everyone his promotion was anti-WWF and anti-WCW, even though at least one of those two was keeping his ship afloat the whole time. But he wasn't much cop at actually turning that faux rebellion into revenue. I'm going to take a small extract from a very well-written piece by Bill Thompson at Pro Wrestling Only. He notes that what Heyman did do was make the promotion of ECW itself into the star. I'd say that may be his most detrimental contribution of all. It's not like Heyman originated that way of thinking, but he pushed it really hard. And look at the state of wrestling today, and the complete lack of stars compared to the star that is the promotion. Seth Rollins isn't the star. It's WWE that is the star. It's an absolutely sad state of affairs, and Heyman definitely helped to continue its growth. Which I think is a fascinating point, and thus I'm afraid I have to pass over to the defence.
I will have to disagree there, Your Honour, with regards to the promotion argument. I don't really see the relevance of it, in truth. It's not as if individuals go to WWE shows and chant WWE. They don't necessarily react in general for the company, they react for individuals. Now, the reason...
If at all.
If
Point taken.
Okay. But the reason that we sold out as soon as we announced we were going somewhere before a card was off the base of the strength of the individuals involved, be it Austin, be it Rock. I don't see this correlation between fans being behind a promotion and that having any future consequence whatsoever in the grand scheme of the wrestling business.
If Heyman decided his business would be best run with that approach, and it was, considering that the tenor of the times that they were in, where people were taking talent left, right and centre if they could, they had to make the promotion the star. That way the promotion would always, in theory, exist and thrive because the promotion was the star. If other companies adopt the same approach, that's on them.
While that may be on them, it is an effect on the business in the long term. But, it is an effect.
But with regards to the emailer prior to that mentioning business and... more to the point, the financial situation around ECW, are we really suggesting that that's any reflection on Paul Heyman, a wrestling company going out of business? Again, if we're using that as a marker, we can go back to every territory that went out of business. You know, if we're talking companies that have lost bucket loads of money, we could use someone like TNA as an example, who have lost far more in their first 18 months in existence than ECW ever lost in its 7 years.
And in total, if I'm not mistaken, not to cut you off here, Carl, but has lost $478 million, Pan Renzi's lost on TNA. Paul Heyman, over the course of what he did, without a pot to piss in, lost $7 million by the time the company was closed, and half of that was to his own family.
Indeed. Matthew Allen Hanzo at TPWW Forums notes that Paul's guilty of overspending to try to keep up with the mega corporations, but, as Mr. O'Rourke said momentarily ago, WCW lost more in 2000 than ECW made in its entire run.
Yeah, just one quick point on that. To my best of my knowledge, TNA paid its workers, though, and that
didn't Taz quit because they didn't pay him? Taz took the individual responsibility when he wasn't being paid to leave the company, which everybody had the chance to do once Paul Heyman breached the contract. Again, if they want to stick around for months on end not getting paid, that's on them, because Paul Heyman lost more money than all those guys did. They could leave, Paul Heyman couldn't. And I don't want to parrot what Paul Heyman said in his own documentary, but that is the fact.
Yep, Paul Heyman's the one who's come out of that period with a job now, with the only one actually making money now. You're casting Heyman as a victim in this, when Cult of Heyman has given him so many opportunities.
On the topic of Paul Heyman personally, Power Butchie over at the UK Fan Forum notes that Heyman's a fine example of wrestling's habit of overlooking how shitty a person is in favour of their work in the industry. Heyman ripped off countless people for an amount of money altogether in the millions and lied to them about it so their families would struggle on the hope that he wasn't lying. He used to change flights on purpose in order to steal money from Turner. He's a fucking shit of a person. Wait, this is where it gets better. Okay. Yes, okay, ECW was well-booked from 94 to 96, and SmackDown was a good to watch from 02 to 03. But for all his good work as a mind, he's a dick of a person. A fucking cunt. I doubt Belvis Wesley could afford a comfortable life for his family, and would probably have been better off getting a day job. But he kept working for free anyway, because Paul E. would tell him, it's on the way, the check will clear. He's a fucking rip-off merchant, he's a cunt, and he looks like he fucking reeks. And actually, let's look at how good a booker he really is. 2 good years in ECW, 2 decent years on SmackDown, that's 4 years, and he worked booking far more. He's got a rate of something like 50% good and 50% shit. And even in his good years, he was churning out a lot of shit. As anyone who sat through Prime ECW would tell you, the main events and some feuds were great. Other stuff was awful, and he also had to rely on wrestling tropes, which are Russo-rific, like misogyny, and he looks down on Russo. Of ECW's 8 years, 2, or arguably 3 years, weren't shit. So how's that a genius? He's a great self-promoter who's always done well in getting himself seen in a certain light, but when you look at the numbers, look at the years, look at the lies, and look at how much he sweats. Heyman's not a winner.
Your Honor, I feel that's the equivalent of nails in the Vince trial in 94 in terms of just pure hatred on the stand. Again, the key thing you mentioned there is the financial aspect and the fact that he's a rip-off merchant, I believe was his words. He didn't pay himself either, apparently. So, and his family's in plenty of debt. I'm not saying that he didn't lie to guys, I'm not saying he didn't manipulate guys, but in terms of the overall negative of his booking on the wrestling business, personal elements I don't see as being super relevant to this case at this time.
Absolutely not. And if they're using people to acknowledge that he, say, lied to someone on more than one occasion, any person worth their salt who has any self-regard for themselves would then call Paul Heyman out or leave. Lance Storm, as an example, had it into his contract that if there was an issue with payment, there was 30 working days to correct it. When that elapsed for the third time, as stipulated in his contract, he effectively served notice on Heyman and told him, if it happens again, I'm exercising my right to leave the company. I appreciate that there are individuals on this roster who were owed money, who were shortchanged by a promoter. Shortchanged by a promoter. Obviously, that never happened before Paul Heyman. Oh, wait, just ask anyone who worked for the Gulas brothers in the territory days. Just ask anyone who worked for the Jarretts about being shortchanged on their money. It's unfortunate for those individuals, but they didn't have to stay. They chose to.
So to clarify, the defense is saying that while Heyman may be, and I'm quoting, a fucking cunt, it is irrelevant to this particular trial.
Absolutely. He's...
On the subject which we briefly touched upon earlier, of stars in ECW not making any money, both individually and for the company, I would like to use the words of Sean Lisker at Pro Wrestling Only. To me, it's always unfair to just say that Heyman's booking didn't draw any money. Look at those ECW TV shows from 1993. Look at how small-time indie it was. His booking grew ECW into something that could go into Chicago and draw 4,000, or 3,000 in Buffalo, or 4,000 in Pittsburgh, 3,000 in Daytona. ROH has a similar exposure and can't top 1,000. You can knock the business model for not turning a profit, but the creative put an impressive amount of asses in seats. Since the national expansion of the mid-80s, no other company that started as an indie fed ever grew close to what ECW did. Because of the ability to make stars, and yes, get brand loyalty. So on that topic, has the prosecution any words to say?
Come back to our original argument of sustainability. He grew the company beyond its means, absolutely. We started off this debate, this court case, by acknowledging that. But it's a long-term sustainability. You have 2, 3, 4 good years, ultimately you go out of business not long after, owing millions. That's long-term impact. His booking was not able to draw money in the long term to sustain a company, keep families with food on their plates.
Just as a counter to that, though, I mean, this is a point they mentioned at the beginning and that they've only briefly touched on it here and there, this idea of sustainability. Your Honour, I'd like to ask, what is sustainability in the wrestling landscape at this time? The WCW under Ted Turner only lasted, what, Carl, 12, 13 years? ECW lasted 8?
Yeah, and we lament WCW for getting out of business as well.
Context, detriment to the wrestling business, Paul Heyman versus these two big companies that have all this money. Paul Heyman's got nothing, and he lasted 8 years.
And he ended it with less.
Yes, but again, overall detriment, is that detriment to the wrestling business? A company goes out of business when every company, apart from the WWE, has gone out of business, pretty much, compared to the influence that ECW did have positively on the business during the course of its existence. Was the business better because of ECW being there to help cultivate these guys that would go on to greater heights? If ECW wasn't around and they didn't take the elements that they used for attitude to kind of boost their company into the next realm, okay, compared to the fact that a company went out of business when almost every company ever has gone out of business.
One such message from UK Kat Von D at the UK fan forums. I'm going to direct this towards the prosecution. I know they are listening intently. Heyman isn't overrated in terms of promoting. The fact he is held in such high regard by many is a testament to how good at promoting he actually is. He made so many nobodies into stars, some of whom he protected better than any other promoter has been able to since. Some very average guys can still make money from that run 15 years later. He took chicken shit and made it into a cult following that continued to grow once the company went out of business. You can't deny he had a clear vision for ECW, and he cultivated that image to perfection. In terms of image and branding, he has to be one of the best promoters ever.
So he's basically saying that Paul Heyman's kind of rewarded these guys with something that they can use in the future to get jobs. Well, we've already mentioned earlier about people still doing the same gimmicks years later, still putting their body on the line. You referenced Axel Rotten. Have you seen Axel Rotten recently? Have you seen what he looks like? Have you seen Balls Mahoney, what he looks like? Or Sabu? You see like the state that they're in right now? And the reason why is because of the style that they're still doing. Because Paul Heyman created the style that they needed to do. They've continued to do hardcore wrestling. Sabu, at whatever age he is now, he hasn't turned into a technical wrestler. He's still flipping into fucking tables.
And is
he's
that Paul
still
Heyman's
scarring
fault,
himself.
Though? Honestly, yeah, I'm not doing
Paul,
to
Heyman, Paul but... Heyman, like, helped create that character with him. And he, like, perpetuated the style of the hardcore style of going through tables. Come and see ECW, because Sabu will put someone through tables.
True, however, if the I will point out the prosecution making their salient point, which I believe the defense, I'm not sure if they're willfully ignoring, but they are seem to be avoiding, which is that the character jointly created with Paul Heyman, are you saying that Sabu could make money on the independent scene if he dropped the character entirely and became that technical wrestler, which you're saying is, as you just said, his personal choice, if he went out as Steve?
I'm not saying that he needs to call himself Steve, but I'm just
there's
saying,
been a very few famous Steves in the business. I have indeed.
How I just want to make the point that it is up to the individual to evolve themselves outside of something. Made his name as Sabu in ECW. Keiji Muto was the great Muta, and long after his knees were fucked, he became a ground worker, and he still was able to draw money because he was fucking talented. If these guys may not have work today if it wasn't for the fact that Heyman was able to get something out of them back then.
And let's be clear on a couple of individuals there. Axel Rotten has actually suffered a stroke. On the subject of Sabu, the character in its infancy existed before ECW. Sabu himself has acknowledged that. What was Paul Heyman drawn to, in his own words, when he first saw Sabu? His body was covered in scars. He'd already been doing this to himself before ECW, before Paul Heyman. In Sabu's own words, ECW was just spot shows when he was first with the roster. Did Paul Heyman make Sabu go over to Japan and do that to himself in FMW? I don't believe so.
They could have changed, but why didn't they? Paul Heyman had no influence on him at all, right? So if Paul Heyman had no influence, why did they keep doing the same spiel?
Because that's all they can do.
The reason all they can do is because Paul Heyman told them that's all they can do.
No, he did. Can you prove that? Paul Heyman said this is all he can do. Where have you got that?
Because listen to earlier what I was talking about with Paul Heyman. Like, he puts this image across, right, that the, you know, other companies didn't want or whatever, you know, like the Rottens or Balls Mahoney and so on. And so no one's going to want to see them try and wrestle. So they had to do this hardcore style. And so that's what they did. If they wanted to get over, at this company, they had to do a hardcore style because that's what the fans wanted.
They didn't have to.
Because that's what Paul Heyman wanted them to do.
If they wanted it, it's about them then, in that case. And again, I know the judge doesn't want me to hark on about this, but it's relevant. This personal responsibility matters. You have to, as a man or woman, say enough is enough. I've referenced there with Sabu, he was doing this stuff before Paul Heyman. This wasn't Paul Heyman telling him to do it. He was already doing it. That's what drew Heyman to him. That's why Heyman wanted to make him a focal point, because he was already in existence in that sort of character, if you like. Again, I'm going to hark on about Sabu here, because what did his uncle say to him? You've got to get your heat back. So what did he say? After matches, I decided to throw the table in the ring and start moonsaulting tables with no one on them. He fucked his own knees up. Paul Heyman didn't tell him to do that. His uncle did. His own flesh and blood.
I think this point of why guys still do their old style, although the defence has tried to absolve Heyman of the blame, the reality of the situation is the atmosphere within the original ECW, both amongst the boys backstage and the fans themselves, the atmosphere that Heyman simulated was of a close-knit social group of guys together. One of the key reasons, even beyond the money they make, because let's face it, they're not making a lot of money on the indies doing their shit these days, is because of that past glory. It's like Randy the Ram. It's the past glories that they thought they had in this idyllic world created by Heyman, of this glorious period. It does come directly back to Heyman, because Heyman fostered it for the good of his ECW at the time. Still kill themselves because they're trying to relive these past glories, this glorious period that meant absolutely fucking nothing to them really in the long term, but it's the semblance of golden period that Heyman fostered and created in their minds, amongst the fans, the atmosphere of ECW.
Your Honour, I don't believe either myself or Liam said that we were absolving Paul Heyman of any blame or saying he didn't play a part. It's their lack of talent to change that's causing many of these issues. Liam there mentioned Muta as an example of someone who evolved, who was able to ground his style, as a talented wrestler is able to do. These wrestlers weren't talented enough, and that's their problem. That's their problem that they couldn't evolve, not Paul Heyman. And on the subject of these people trying to recapture these glories, well, we'll go back to it, because we'll hark on about him, and they even used him as an example themselves in this. They said Axel Rotten was quoted as saying it was the biggest mistake of his life. And yet he still decides that it were. If it's such a mistake, why not take responsibility for your own actions and stop doing it?
They bought into it. They bought into his bullshit. They bought into his hype, and they can't let go. They can't let go of something that should probably never happen in the first place.
And is that more detrimental in the history of the wrestling business than the positive influence of ECW? Because these guys can't get another job, don't want to get another job, have to focus because it's they're clinging
element.
To
it's
the
an,
past.
But it's an element.
It's a tiny element that you can't even put on Paul Heyman because there's so much personal responsibility involved. Your Honour, I think we need to proceed.
I turn now to Air Raid at the UK Fan Forum. The human cost of what ECW did and ultimately meant to pro wrestling was very high. but the nature of their life as an alternative where those guys went who either had been rejected by the big two or spat back out by them, they attracted the desperate, the troubled, and the easily led. The in-ring style and laissez-faire attitude to substance abuse in the locker room destroyed marriages, homes, and lives. Without getting into the ins and outs of every addiction and suicide, ECW was, unquestionably, a poison chalice for many wrestlers that made it a long-term home rather than a short stop between lands afar and the big time. However, the question is posed in regards to professional wrestling, not wrestlers. And for that reason, Heyman has to be given credit for both the anarchic television style and wild brawling of match that WWF would successfully imitate and refine in 1998, and also creating an environment where the wrestler characters were far more realistic and true to themselves in a lot of instances. If the performance of WCW and Nitro gave Vince and his crew the motivation to change what they were doing, and eventually becoming edgier and develop what we would now know as attitude, then it was Heyman and ECW that gave him the lion's share of the tools. The violence and swearing, the more frequent use of tables, more realistic characters, more on-screen female talent that we were all meant to want to fuck. What I'm trying to say is that the product that the WWF transformed into did so by borrowing liberally from ECW. They saw a product whose core demographic was exactly the kind of fan that they knew they were losing to WCW. And so, with a far more refined but similar product, they were able to recapture the imagination of a generation of fans who had grown up with Hulkamania, but had become disillusioned as they grew up when WWF didn't grow up with them, serving up clowns and plumbers and dustbin men, while WCW was giving them cool cats like the NWO and cutting-edge cruisers and technicians. I'm not saying that ECW's influence is the only, or even the biggest, reason for the WWF's resurgence, but I'm going to use that phrase once more. Borrowed liberally. If Paul Heyman had not created what he did in that bingo hall, the Attitude Era probably wouldn't have happened. What would have happened to the WWF and in turn professional wrestling in the States, it doesn't bear thinking about.
Obviously, while we may say there's an influence from ECW, we've said on this podcast before, especially during our Monday Night War reviews, that at the time, particularly Vince in 96 going forward, was throwing shit at the wall and trying everything, anything and everything, see what would stick. So to directly say it was ECW that created the Attitude Era or something, I think is very, very naive and short-sighted. And if it was so successful itself, why did ECW end up going out of business so quickly? Maybe fanboys would like to give ECW credit for WWE's financial success, where maybe they should just say, hey, Vince McMahon's good at his own job.
Vince McMahon is good at his own job. However, the counter to that, you mentioned they were throwing shit at the wall, and they did throw a lot of shit at the wall, but what's the shit that stuck? It was the Attitude Era.
Yeah, but wouldn't they have tried that anyway?
We don't know.
As you said yourself, the style has been around for years, so the most logical thing, if you're throwing shit at the wall, someone goes through a table for the first time on, when that happens, does it, and it, oh, that got over. Would they have run with it? Did they run with it because it was over in ECW, or did they run with it because on one occasion when they did it separately on their own TV it got over? I'm more inclined to think, by the way Vince works, that's the course of the course that history would have taken with or without ECW.
But again, we don't know that's the case. In terms of if they did something for the first time and it worked, they progressed down that alley, I will agree completely. But why did they try it in the first place? Because they saw it in ECW and they saw the reaction it got there.
I just want to address the myth of Heyman as his talent creator. As has been said, Heyman, best thing Heyman has been able to promote has been himself over the years, and this is demonstrated by when he tried to elevate John Cena on SmackDown. Heyman knew that Cena was going to be the chosen golden boy because of his body and look, that Vince was going to give him a chance. He requested Cena on SmackDown to then, with the goal of garnering the respect of that he was the one who promoted John Cena and made John Cena a star. It didn't work under Paul Heyman. He didn't have the magic there to do it, and John Cena ended up getting over on his own right. Who was responsible for getting John Cena over is a moot point. My point here is, this is the exposure of the myth of Heyman as the talent creator. In retrospect, he will take credit. Austin, Foley, Jericho, etc., for being responsible for their rise to fame. It's great. It's easy to do in retrospect. In reality, it may have well have happened on their own backs in their own time anyway.
The John Cena example, Your Honor, is a completely isolated case, and even those in the company at the time have said that John Cena had a lot of political bickering. Triple H wasn't a big fan of his, got an angle where Cena was supposed to slap Vince in the face, vetoed, that there was a lot of hamstringing. Paul Heyman is not the sole voice in charge in this company, keep in mind. And for every example like a Paul Heyman, there's a case like a Brock Lesnar who got over great and was the biggest draw in 2003 under Paul Heyman's booking.
To take a statement from 30-year fan at WrestlingForum.com, one could argue that ECW had possibly some influence on the WWE creation of the Attitude Era. But the Attitude Era likely happens, ECW or no ECW, just not going to defeat WCW straight up just wrestling-wise. But they were going to have to change the product into a more edgy one full of controversy. ECW catered to a niche audience, and their style has only helped influence the choreographed spot fests that is only hurting the in-ring product today. In the long term, ECW has not had any positive effect on wrestling, and I have felt that way for years.
Whether or not that would have happened without ECW is something that is unprovable. The entire point here is innocent until proven guilty. The burden of proof sits on the prosecution not to say what could have happened in a complete alternate universe, but what did happen. What did happen was it was there and it was influential.
CS at Pro Wrestling Only notes, not guilty. All of these... Shit! No! Out of context! Son of a bitch! All of the things Heyman and ECW are being raked over hot coals for in this trial were an absolute necessity at the time. On the topic of the brand being the true star, with talent constantly being poached by the big two, mostly WCW, this was, quite frankly, smart business. Fans being part of the show. At the time, both WWF and WCW were so sterile and corporate that the fans were kept at a safe distance. ECW was the antithesis of that. Its shows had a homegrown, grassroots feel, and this was a major part of that. Again, smart business. I hate the "this is awesome" chant, etc., the type of smart bullshit now as much as anyone else, but I understand why it was encouraged at the time. It made ECW different, and that was important. On the topic of the hardcore style, damaging, yes, but ECW also showcased technical wrestling and Lucha Libre before WCW made the latter a staple on Nitro. Heyman, for better or worse, basically let the wrestlers do what they wanted. And they all wanted to top each other. Jerry Von Kramer at Pro Wrestling Only brings an interesting point to the table. He says, I think you can draw a direct line from ECW to the phenomena that has been plaguing wrestling for the past 15 years. No, I'm not talking about garbage wrestling or hardcore or anything like that. I'm talking about the annoying as fuck smarky crowds getting themselves over. You Fucked Up definitely has its genesis in ECW, but I bet This Is Awesome does too. I don't know if Heyman is personally responsible for that, but he certainly encouraged it. Those types of chants are a cancer on pro wrestling, and accordingly, I find him guilty, Your Honor.
While I agree, I don't see how it's necessarily a detriment on the business in the long term. It might not be his preference, but there's no measurable metric to say, well, these fans chanting this is a bad thing. Even though I hate it personally.
I say, wouldn't you agree, though, that even today, even this past weekend, we've seen a ladder match, and the fans are more interested in chanting "We want tables" for no fucking rhyme or reason than actually paying attention to the match itself.
So to bring this proceedings to a close, I would like to focus our participants on the actual charge itself, that Paul Heyman's booking was more detrimental than positive for the business in the long term. So, judging, I would like an answer. Is it a positive that we do, or negative that we do, or do we simply not see it at all, in which case it would be a negligible influence? First of all, the concept of encouraging damaging behavior in wrestlers.
Absolutely detrimental to the business.
And how does that affect the business today?
Deaths of wrestlers, deteriorating health of wrestlers, continuing drug problems of wrestlers, and not only that, the stigma that surrounds that in the media and amongst fans that comes from the long-term detrimental effects of that style.
From our perspective, it's negligible, because you've got to think about this in the context of Heyman, and there were plenty of other people doing it at the time. And if you look at the business now, It's cleaner than it has been in years. Far from perfect, but much cleaner than it used to be.
Encouraging negative behaviour in fans.
You're looking long term. I think it's completely negligible. I don't see why this is impacting negatively the wrestling business. For the short term, which is what Paul Heyman, everyone's booking for the in the moment. I mean, that's just the nature of the wrestling business. That's something that's been lost over on the other side here, is that people are thinking right now, for our business in the wider landscape, is it good or bad? It was positive in the sense for the company at the time to do that. And again, this is an element that Paul Heyman didn't necessarily rely on as a crutch in all of his booking. He didn't do that in SmackDown. He didn't try and get the fans to SmackDown. He created stars in that umbrella. The SmackDown period's been largely missed because there's so much harping on ECW. But again, during the SmackDown phase, Paul Heyman didn't rely on that. He relied on that when all he had was a hardcore audience who were passionate about his product. But that's not a crutch of Paul Heyman booking necessarily. It just was in that circumstance.
So within that actual audience themselves, they create a cult amongst themselves in, well, isn't this fantastic? Isn't this the best sort of crowd ever where we can always talk like this? And so now it leaks through and people who were from that time, that was around for ECW or watched it from that time, or people who may watch it on the network or whatever, these people still want to live up to that time where they're like, oh, well, we were a part of the show. Like in ECW, or they were the part of the show in ECW. We want to be like that. So hence, you're going to get these We Are Awesome chants. That you get during a Randy Orton Sheamus match, was it post WrestleMania, which is detrimental to the business, because you got two guys wrestling and the audience can't give a flying fuck. The crowd almost promote themselves.
The state of ECW and other Paul Heyman veterans in the independent scene today.
I think that this entire point is negligible to the charge at hand. I'll be quite honest. I think that just if these guys have got work based on something that happened years ago, good for them individually. But in terms of the wider landscape of whether Paul Heyman's booking was a detriment to the business, I think that what these guys are doing years after the fact is irrelevant when it's on such a small scale.
Just to go back to the Barbed Wire City documentary, we talk about New Jack and Stevie Richards talking about the guys from the past turned up on pills, drunk, or even shooting up. Quote from Stevie Richards, who says, I don't get in the ring with me like that. It shows a lack of respect for your opponent and a lack of respect for the business, and it's complete unprofessionalism. So is it detrimental that they're still around? Absolutely, because it's unsafe. It's unsafe working environments, and guys like that should not be in the wrestling industry.
Our final statements will now commence, beginning with the prosecution.
Look, Paul Heyman, his legacy is detrimental to the business. And the reason why is because you just got to look at what this actual legacy is. We're talking about a guy that, when you're looking at ECW in particular first, you're looking at a guy who created a company that was all about hardcore wrestling. And all these wrestlers had to fall in line with it because developed the audience to want bloodletting. And so because of that, the wrestlers had to bloodlet. They had to do blade jobs. They had to go through tables and so on and so forth. You're having a whole group of guys who have put themselves through God knows what in order just to get over with a small crowd. We've gone into like a drug abuse, which, okay, he may not facilitate. He may not be a drug dealer, but he certainly knew existed. Didn't lay a single finger to actually try and nullify this. If he was being an actual responsible business owner, Vince McMahon has put people in rehab before. Like, Paul Heyman's made no move to try and help these people out, either during ECW or post. He's continued on even past ECW, where he actually just abandoned them after he realised that the ship was sinking. Didn't bother telling them that he was leaving. Goes over to WWF, has never paid them back, doesn't give a shit about him. He just used them for himself. Because at the end of the day, his entire legacy, whether it's in ECW or SmackDown, is just to create this image of Paul Heyman, that he's this great guy. I'm going to very quickly read a quote from one of his guys, okay? New Jack, right? Paul Heyman was a wart. He was a piece of shit and a liar. You know what I mean? He was a selfish motherfucker. He was out for himself. He was out for just him. And he was the biggest bullshit con artist you ever met in your fucking life. And he did a lot of shady shit at the end. And it caused a lot of people to lose husbands, wives, money, houses, cars, kids, etc., etc. At the end of the day, Paul Heyman was out to facilitate his own legacy. And he'd call over anybody to do it. Because at the end of the day, Paul Heyman only ever cared about himself. Not really the industry.
And the defense, final statement, 2 minutes on the clock, stick to it better than he fucking did.
the terms used by Giontes there, it was ECW was all about hardcore. These guys had to fall in line, both completely incorrect. Nobody came out looking good but Paul Heyman out of ECW. Completely ridiculous. How many guys got jobs because of their time in ECW? Guys that never would have got jobs, like the Dudleys, like the Public Enemy, like chances like Sabu. It's completely ridiculous. Saying they said themselves, Paul Heyman may not have facilitated the drug use, which completely shits on their own point. These are all, Your Honor, focused on the individuals, wrestlers, a small fragment. And I'm not saying that there weren't negative elements to ECW on people's lives, but the point is, the wrestling business, Paul Heyman's booking, detrimental or positive in the long run, correct? That's the point. ECW, as a booking mechanism, was far more positive for the influence it had on the business. If it wasn't there, it would have been worse off. The guys that got opportunities to make lots and lots of money in the big companies got there because Paul Heyman introduced them into a company where they were able to get over through his protection, through his booking. And in terms of bigger picture, detrimental to the wrestling business or not? Absolutely not. Paul Heyman on SmackDown provided the SmackDown 6. 3 years of fantastic television that wasn't just about hardcore wrestling, but brought in so many different elements and helped revitalize a business that desperately needed revitalizing in 1995 and 1996. The bottom line is, Your Honor, when you look at the whole industry, the big picture, not individuals, Paul Heyman, if he was not in the business, things would be much worse off.
At this time, I am going to choose to retire to my chambers. When I return, I will present the final, unequivocal verdict to the charge that Paul Heyman's booking was more detrimental than positive for the business in the long term. After deliberation, this trial has been one of fervent debate. One thing I've noticed is it has included both sides accusing the other of arguing against their own point. And this comes down to different interpretations of the charge. Booking is a broad term, as is the phrase long term. Now, for my decision, I have thus had to choose singular definitions for these words. I have already stressed my thought that long term should reflect the effect on the business today, the longest term we have. Booking is linked to far more aspects, certainly linked to the style of hardcore, and thus I can understand the bringing up of drug effects, because there is a solid argument to be made that their usage is linked to the effect that form of wrestling has on one's body. Also, the mentality effect on the audience would certainly be linked to the booking, as that was part of Heyman's scheme. However, some of the things we brought up, I would argue, have not been on charge. While we do have examples, as provided by G. John Chase, that Paul Heyman was fully aware of the drug system within his company, and indeed, the argument could certainly be made that he did more than the promoters of other companies in furthering that. Certainly, we can all agree that owners of essentially every other wrestling company are fully aware of a lot of the stuff that goes on within their company, although they most likely do not participate in the proliferation as much as the quote provided by G. John Jace, or the paraphrase. However, I strive to take the long view on the long-term element of the business. If we look at the business today as a whole, I must factor in the size and scope of what the WWE has become. I must factor in the independents, and I must factor in those unfortunate bodies such as TNA that fit in between. I am sticking with the Western side of the business, because I do not believe anyone has put forward any arguments today of Paul Heyman influencing Japan or Mexico or any non-Americanized industries. So, the industry today, I think it is safe to say that defense made an argument that it is cleaner than it has been in a very long time. This is due to many, many factors, and I believe that Paul Heyman was not a major detrimental factor. And it certainly seems that we are in a positive mode there compared to where we were when Paul Heyman was fully active in ECW. So I will not accept that particular argument. I will agree that during that period, it was certainly detrimental on those particular wrestlers. And those particular wrestlers certainly detrimental to their lives in the long term. But we are talking about the business. And those wrestlers have not been significant players in the business in the long term. There is always the question, of course, of what they could have become had they not become embroiled in such things. But we shall never know. On the topic of booking, in the sense of the hardcore wrestling style which links to this. We look at the long term once again. Hardcore wrestling peaked and fell again. The hardcore wrestling that many people, certainly growing up in international audiences, would not be recognized as the hardcore wrestling of ECW. It would be regarded as, it would be remembered as that put forward by the major companies, which was always lesser and somewhat sidelined. There were very popular and famous main events that I can think of in the major companies, primarily in the WWE and F, that used hardcore implements and elements from Paul Heyman's period to create very impressive matches and spectacles. That would certainly be considered positive in the long term. In the longest term that we see now, those elements have, on the large field, faded almost entirely. And we also see that wrestlers are still getting injured and damaged bodies in the long term. So it is very difficult for me to link a negative, detrimental effect to the body and health of wrestlers for the business in the long term, specifically to hardcore wrestling, as we are still seeing those injuries, as we did before. On the topic of some of wrestling today, in the long term, largest stars, people like Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, those who passed through ECW, and that being a positive effect of Paul Heyman's booking, this is difficult to gauge. While I am not a fan of the ifs, ands, or buts of what might have happened, and the idea of maybe they would have been picked up anyway, I certainly allow the argument from the prosecution. While they were given a platform in ECW, that was not the only platform. While it was perhaps the best lit and the best presented at that period, I think there is a strong argument that they could well, possibly would, have been picked up by one of the major players. So it is difficult for me, for those who have just breezed through Paul Heyman's touch, it almost implies that Paul Heyman's touch works well in the short term, but those who were associated with him for the longer term are rarely seen again, for many of the reasons, possibly, that the prosecution put forward. I believe that in this particular instance, the prosecution were unable to fully convince this judge, while making many good arguments, they were unable to convince this judge by presenting detrimental effects that still persist in the business to this day. They presented many detrimental effects that involved individuals in that period of time, and it has affected those individuals to this day, but had no significant effect on the business as a whole to this day. That was the charge, that Paul Heyman's booking was more detrimental than positive for the business in the long term. And thus, Paul Heyman is not guilty.
Yes! Woo!
You'll get over it.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Another sterling judgment there.
Wait!
Oh, fucking...
Hold on, I'm going to use this fucking gavel if it kills me. Hold on. Order and shit. There you go. I got it in. I feel better now.
Yeah, good. I don't know if you guys crossed the table, but you're looking quite sour-faced at the moment. Very unhappy with things. I want to see what you think.
Yeah, I'm just... I'm honestly more pissed off at myself because I thought... the viewers won't hear this, but when we started off, I started off on a long diatribe. It was going to be the prosecution's case, and I was rambling all over the shop, and we kind of changed the structure, and I thought the case as a whole went down too much the hardcore route, which was intended to be the first of many points, but I fully take blame on myself for not leading the prosecution in the way that I envisaged when I was jotting down ideas. I think had I personally been able to articulate the points that I had in mind, I think it may have been a different case. So I think Paul Heyman's a very lucky, lucky boy. And I will say, for implementing Tommy Dreamer on the world, he should be guilty alone.
That's a different charge.
G, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I'm enjoying the fact that I'm continuing to be the Honma of this court case. So constantly losing no matter how many headbutts I land. So whilst I'm gutted that we lost, at the same time as probably the biggest Paul Heyman fan, I'm glad he's not guilty, because it would have been, if he did go down, then I wouldn't have done any more of these fucking shows anymore, because for Kevin Nash and Eric Bischoff to get off scot-free and Paul Heyman to go down, this would just become a fucking farce.
I will say, I honestly think that with that argument, I think it's very tough to illustrate bigger detriment than positive, which is actually the one thing that I didn't mention at the end, was what even if the word detrimental effects was it more than the positive, which is something that I failed to kind of mention myself. Having said that, I think that like I said, but during the course of the trial, I think the best case is the sponsors and the negative stigma that ECW helped perpetuate, because while ECW influence companies, at the same time with influence comes blame, because you can't say this is responsible for the good, but the bad that came with it, well, they're not responsible for that. So I think that was probably, again, I'm not sure if that's bigger overall a detriment than positive. Carl, what do you think?
Well, it's something that I thought they could have had us with, because that then you could have tied into WCW and the losses to the point where you could have stressed TNT and, well, AOL, Time Warner as a company, were willing to put on a lower rated program of any nature because they were willing to, because they would get higher dollar advertising revenues, which they wouldn't have gotten from a wrestling company, profitable or not, because of the stigma of fans. Now, it may have been tricky to sort of thread the needle in demonstrating that was an ECW cause, but that's something where I thought you would have had us on shaky ground.
Yeah. So, I completely agree. That was kind of the intention in my head, my the direction I wanted to go. I just pretty disappointed in myself. That was a pretty shit job, Kieran.
I wouldn't say shit job.
I'm quitting the show again.
That's harsh. Now, this is the thing. The argument that you made with the hardcore thing was done so intensely, and tying in the Paul Heyman, which to me is the smoking gun on the drugs point of go find New Jack and get some coke in you right now, is a quote that is just completely indefensible, really. It's like, you can't imagine Vince McMahon saying that to Steve Austin, or Eric Bischoff saying that to Hulk Hogan, you know? It's like, that's, on the drug point, that's a bad one.
And if this trial had been about Paul Heyman piece of shit, let's be clear, we'd have been fucked from the outset. Unethical, would sell his own mother.
Fired his own mother.
You know, if this was about Heyman, the person, I don't think we'd have had a leg to stand on. But tying everything back to that charge that's the difficult one. And the drugs thing, you're absolutely right, Sam. Absolute piece of shit. But how you tie that into the landscape of the whole business isn't easy. And just in response to G's earlier remarks there, so 3-1, baby.
Kudos, Luke. How did you find judging after all this time?
I've just realised that I've spent the entire time speaking with a different voice, so as far as people anywhere else could be concerned, I could be a different fucking person.
Yeah, you're not even the real Luke Edwards.
I have to insist that... guys, you people who write on forums and stuff, make sure you write to Liam, because I want to be able to read out those letters, those forum posts you guys send us. I want to be able to read those out in that voice more often, because that was fucking hilarious in places. Thank you guys so much. Seriously, it was kind of tricky, and I think a lot of that was the wording of the charge. I didn't know what the charge was until I arrived today. I might have asked to change a few elements of it, because I think that we strayed a lot away from Paul Heyman's booking into just the word ECW. And if you swap out Paul Heyman's booking for the word ECW, the charge is a little bit more balanced, because it reads literally that ECW was more detrimental than positive for the business in the long term. And I think that is what a lot of you guys on the forums kind of argued either way, rather than Paul Heyman's booking, which is a bit more specific and a bit trickier to discuss. Still, I really enjoyed it. I was expecting, coming in today, all I knew, I decided to stay completely away from this, I knew it was something about Paul Heyman being on trial, and I was expecting it to be about him being a dick, or about, you know, money and that kind of thing. But I think this was a really interesting topic. I hope you guys have too. I really enjoyed it. I got to hit things from the gavel and shit, man. Yeah.
As we discovered in the Bischoff and Nash trials, the other two not guilty verdicts we've had so far, the wording of the charge has been absolutely pivotal each time in terms of the argument. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank everybody for the feedback. If we didn't get to yours this time, we apologise. For Carl Jones.
Clarence Mason ain't got shit on me.
For G. John Chase.
Vote Trump.
For Kieran O'Rourke.
Bye.
And for Luke Edwards. He's deafened everybody. I am Liam O'Rourke, and we are out of here.
Neighbours are going to love that.